This program was first broadcast on Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. For more information on Fresh FM, as well as links to other great local programs, go to our website, freshfm.net, or download the Access Internet Radio app.
Hello and welcome. I'm Galen Pound, and you're listening to Top Writers. My guest today is writer Garrick Batten. Garrick comes from a high-profile background, both nationally and internationally, in the agricultural sector. This is naturally reflected in his writings. He has written articles, conference and academic papers, pamphlets, radio, video, newsletters, newspaper columns, and books on technical topics. Most recently, Big Bucks for Pastoral Farmers, Commercial Pastoral Goat Farming for More Profit, as well as a collection of short stories, Short Head and Yards, a hybrid fiction fact book accounting for changes in rural life over the half century up to 2000 called What Happened to Haystacks and Horses. In December 2017, he republished the fictional autobiography part as a standalone book, Farmer Bill. Earlier this year, Garrick was longlisted for the Flash Frontier Micro Madness competition for Refugees Rock On. Welcome to Top Writers, Garrick.
Thank you, Galen.
Right, now today we're going to discuss some pieces of your writing, and the first piece is?
Well, I'd like to just preamble that a little by saying that I've been writing as part of all those things you mentioned for all my career, really, which has been involved in basically trying to help farmers. So I've done all those things which have that end point, but they all involve writing, the radio, the television, reports, all that stuff involves writing, but it's all technical writing. And in my older age, I get the joy of being able to prepare a monthly column for the Nelson Marlborough Farming News with the editorial instruction of make the readers think. So I'd like to read you part of a column about that, which actually got a lot of feedback from the readers in the last few months, and it's entitled On Wings and Prayer. Tourist businesses will have to defend the current hidden and increasing contribution to climate change. Tourism means travel. Last year, 3.9 million international visitors plus 2.9 million New Zealanders travelled out of the country, and both travelled internally as well, all adding to our carbon footprint. So Conservation Minister Sage emphasises sustainability as part of the solution to climate change, and tourism isn't encouraging environmental sustainable life. That deserves more focus than the repetition of farming as the climate change culprit. Aviation is one of the world's fastest growing emission sources. Our air travel contribution is already significant and stoked by continuing ratepayer and taxpayer support, such as the recent Primary Growth Partnership funding of $253 million. That brings cruise ship visitors each, adding a couple of tonnes of carbon. Air travel has grown steadily in recent years, with Otago University estimating increased emissions since 2005 of 42% by international travellers and 78% by New Zealanders travelling overseas. In the last 7 years, Air New Zealand's contributed 22% with more flights and more people, and international visitors made up 80% of that. Air New Zealand pays GST, but no excise tax on fuel that costs motorists 70 cents a litre. It provides 4% of our emissions, but sheltered in the tourism bubble from demands currently placed and planned for farm emissions. It excludes international aviation from its carbon budgets, and it's not included in our ETS to pay a carbon tax. It does opt in for the 20% of domestic business that adds only 8 cents per litre of its excise-free fuel cost. So the situation of the PM's general nuclear moment contrasts with the strategy to continue to support national and regional economies to increase international visitors and then add another 1.3 million tonnes of carbon to damage the environment and conflict with zero carbon aspirations. I won't read any more of that, but you can see it's fairly detailed, technical, and has to be right. So that's what technical writing is all about. It has to be right. This, as I said, has a message to make the readers think, so it has to be trying to be couched in wording that will stimulate that.
So even though it's a general audience, it's still the technical aspects, and I bet you got a lot of feedback over that.
I did.
Yes,
the phone rang within about 2 minutes of it happening.
Because we do tend to blame the farmers for everything. But we forget that when we are going to climate change conferences or whatever, we all fly there, therefore more carbon emissions. Right. Now, how much research did you have to do for that? Quite a lot. So is the internet a good tool these days?
Yes, it is. But in the course of a career of absorbing information and then reproducing it in various forms, you suck up little bits of information from all sorts of sources. And that may be the internet. It may be books. It's talking to people. It's all sorts of ways.
So how much of an impact has the internet made on being able to easily do research these days?
Well, it's made it easy, but you can't necessarily believe everything you see on the internet. So you've got to be very perceptive. So it needs, you know, Dr. Google is not unique.
No, he is not indeed. Right, now, you are going to transfer from non-fiction to a piece that is fiction. Would you like to tell us about that, please?
Before I start on talking about that, if I may, I'd just like to say that writing, despite my communications activity, writing's always been part of my life, and it was the only subject that got me through school certificate for a start. And I was the sports editor of the school magazine, and I actually was a sports reporter for the Manawatu Evening Standard when I was at Mercy College. And then later on, I was the editor of Cacklin, the Lincoln College newspaper. So I had that sort of writing background to start, which was helpful when you got into this agricultural career of communicating with farmers and the government and ministers at various levels. So that helped. And that gave me some confidence that I could actually make the bridge from technical writing into fiction writing. And as you get older, you still need challenges in life. And the challenge of fiction writing is just so difficult because all of a sudden you're not dealing in facts, you're dealing with words which are going to appeal to people and encourage their imagination to some extent based on your imagination. And so you need to have some background to base that on. And when you're coming from a very limited imaginative background, you find that it's quite difficult to make this bridge. And I found it extraordinarily difficult. And that's why I've confined myself to short stories, because I like to think, well, it's a bigger challenge perhaps than a novel even, maybe, some people would say. But it makes you really focus on what you're trying to do and the importance of the words that you're using to convey the messages that you're trying to send. So I've tried to embark on short stories. I've had a limited amount of success entering a couple of competitions, but I find those of limited value because the people who read the short stories don't necessarily appreciate my eloquence and ability. And sometimes you actually wonder whether they've actually read the jolly thing. Anyway, that's beside the point. Exile Publishing last year ran an international competition for mature writers, and it had four themes for short stories. And I managed to get two into the first book of the four themes that are coming out. This one's called Human Kindness, and that's being published next month. And I'd like to read you part of a short story of that. It's all about the theme of human kindness. It's called Lullaby. Right, you lot, bedtime. Oh, Mum, not yet, from the 8-year-old twins. They always did everything together. Can't we stay up later, Mum? It's the holidays, called Tim with 10-year-old child logic. Me too, from 6-year-old Lucy. Read us a story. Yes, yes, a story, they chorused. The single mother, running out of patience at the end of the school holidays, was exhausted, with exasperation starting to boil. 4 days of rain had drowned outside holiday activities. 6-year-olds couldn't play Monopoly, and the twins now scorned slap and snap card games. Tim just wanted his PlayStation, despite his mother's concern at overexposure. Now her recently widowed father had come to stay, and she hadn't even had time to wash her hair. No time for stories. I've got all this wet washing and loads of ironing to do. Off to bed you go. All now. All you go. Can I help, love? Offered her father. Oh, Dad, please. Father-daughter bonds planted in the womb had grown over the years of teenage tantrums, varsity hijinks, marriage in another country, and now divorce. The Clyde family had always stood together. Yes, tell us a story, Grandpa. Yes, a story, please, pleaded the twins together. Where will I start? Tell us about when you were a little boy, but not too little, suggested Tom, hoping for some tips on growing up. Did you like school? I don't. It's boring. Yeah, it's boring, said the twins. Do you want a story or not? Asked their grandfather. If so, come and sit by me on the couch, you, Tim, on the floor, but you've got to promise straight off to bed after I got finished. cross my fingers, look in the eye, break the promise and have to die, they all chanted. Well, sit up here, all comfortable. Lucy, you can sit on my lap. His bear-like arms wrapped her and the twins crammed together like a packet of biscuits, always together. And then later on in the stories, all right, listening. Now, in Standard 6, we had gangs. Everyone was in a gang. All the boys anyway, not girls. They were too bossy. What's Standard 6? Asked the twins together. That's Year 8, called out their mother from the ironing board. Mothers have long ears. And then later on at the end of the story, come on, teeth, bed, teeth, bed, come on, come on. Their mother called from the children, quickly now, you've had your story. The children all uncurled. Thanks, Dad, you're wonderful, a saviour. You've really looked after me, always. I never knew about your gang, though. Did we ever wonder what happened to all the others? Probably like me, making up tall tales for their grandchildren to spare their mother.
Right, that's a really good snapshot of family life. And we can tell by the language it's very, very different. What to you makes a good short story?
Well, you're trying to send a message encapsulated in words which will carry that story and use those words to paint the pictures in the reader's mind. And so vocabulary is important and thesaurus is very valuable and and those sorts of reference books are very helpful. I find you really got to define the audience. And so those stories were deliberately written by mature writers and they were deliberately written for themes. So that was the theme for that one was human kindness. And so that was where it was aimed.
Right. Now, your third piece of writing, would you like to tell us about that, please?
I talked earlier how your life experiences influences your writing. And I had a profound experience in my life after going to university and working on farms for many years. I ended up being transferred from being a farm advisor in Thames, a town of 5,000 people, to be the agricultural counsellor at the High Commission in London for 5 years. So going from Thames of 5,000 people and many years of farming into a city of 12 million people in the 1960s was a dramatic experience. I was involved in diplomatic life, which was most unusual. I was involved with politicians and all sorts of those sorts of people. But I was also part of the swinging 60s, and that's where the Beatles come into it, because although they'd been to New Zealand in the mid-60s, it really wasn't until I got to London and I realised just what was happening in the rest of the world. And one of the particular themes that they were singing about in one of their songs was Strawberry Fields. And then when we came back to New Zealand, we bought a property with 11 acres and 1 acre of it was strawberries. And I'd never had anything to do with strawberries before. I had a farming background. So all of a sudden we had to take on this commercial strawberry growing. And so the story I've written, and I'd like to read a little bit from, relates to that. It's called Strawberry Fields Forever. At Berry Garden Smoko in the packing shed, cracking up together like schoolgirls. Old woman, well, middle-aged anyway, and old enough to be my mother. I reckon Stradlin's best. Is that a cross or within? A giggle. Nah, I reckon Neelan's best, and I've been doing it for years, longer than you. Not like Maggie anyway. You don't do it for long enough, she hooted. Well, it's okay if you get your leg over first. I thought that Honey was the only one that got the leg over in your house. Funny, but they were trying to embarrass me on my first day as the manager. I had the feeling they were trying to tease Maggie's daughter Sue too, as she hid her 20-year-old face under a battered straw hat and a curtain of black hair. I suddenly had a clear red-rimmed flashback to 10 years before, when as one of the strawberry-picking gang myself, I'd escaped from the same fruity talk at the smoker room and gone to sit outside under a shading poplar tree with a mug of tea. Man, the heat in the strawberry field, when you're picking the rows seemed like rule paper, a mirage. I just bent over, trying to shuffle along on straw between black plastic-covered humps, spotted with endless plants sheltering green, reddish, reddening and ripe berries, picking the right ones up, snapping off the stems, popping them into punnets in the tray ahead of me. I'd quickly got past the stage of popping one in my mouth, playing that appropriate Beatles tune in my head and on rotate. Let me take you down.
Right, so that obviously shows the importance about writing what you know. So what your three pieces today have illustrated to me anyway is always consider your audience, and the style of writing you use reflects on who your audience is.
It tries to.
Right, now the song you've chosen today, for those that haven't already guessed, is the Beatles' Strawberry Fields Forever.
Take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. Living is easy with eyes closed. Misunderstanding. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. No one I think is in my tree. I mean, it must be high or low. That is, you can't, you know, tune in, but it's alright. That is, I think it's not too bad. Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. Always know, sometimes think it's me, but you know I know when it's a dream. I think I know, I mean, yes, but it's all wrong. That is, I think I disagree. Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. Strawberry Fields forever. Strawberry Fields forever.
Now, earlier this year, you were longlisted for the Flash Frontier Micro Madness competition for Refugees Rock On. Would you like to just read some of that for us, please?
This is really getting down to encapsulating a theme and a story in a few words. Limit of 100 words. You need to live in an earthquake to know. Everything all shook up forever. House, carefully placed vases of spring flowers, your balance, dreams, chimneys, life, rocking and rolling around you and into the future. She couldn't now see the future in kaleidoscope images, so she panicked a faraway sister, fled, grabbing only 6-year-old daughter, toothbrushes, teddy bear, purse, and just the clothes they scrambled in. Normality now was quickly back to a new school, even in their refugee clothes. What would the locals think? They joined the morning procession, clothed in anonymity and saved an urban reality.
Thank you for that. That is really poignant. And thank you so much for coming in today and sharing your knowledge with us. Garrick's books are available from the Copy Press and Me Books, and the book you've got, two short stories coming out next month, is called
Human Kindness from Exile Publishing.
And that will be available through good bookshops?
I'm sure it will be. Right. And from Exile Publishing directly.
I'm Galen Pound, and you've been listening to Top Writers. A podcast of this program and upcoming events can be found on www.topwriters.co.nz.
Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this podcast available by funding the Access Internet Radio Project. Other great local programs from Fresh FM are available through the Access Internet Radio app or our website, freshfm.net.